CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Here we are on a Thursday morning, and Pumi Mashiko is with us, and it's you and me and her for the moment. Their bang will be joining us in a moment or two as well. Got a busy day planned for you, and a Thursday that we're kind of getting to that time of year. I said to Pumi this morning, she said, "How are you?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm all right, but I'm ready for a break." And I think we all are, right, Pums? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's getting to that time. Although there's always work to do at this time, especially for parents. I mean, you've even though Kanejo's growing up, Christmas is a busy time and it's a stressful time for parents, right?
Oh, so this is, you know where this is our last year in primary school.
Uh-huh.
So it's an exceptionally busy time of year. Like there's end of year, like not concerts, but like assemblies and
prize givings and things, right?
But there's getting ready for high school.
Oof. How's he feeling about that?
Excited.
Okay. That's good.
Excited. He's going back to his favorite. And he's beside himself. He gets to be with all his old friends again. I don't know if I had this conversation with you guys, but I've also chosen to send him to weekly boarding next year.
Oh, really? Ooh, that's a big change. That's quite a thing. I mean, that used to be, like, my parents used to do that. Both of my parents were weekly boarders, and you know, were nice schools, but they said they used to hate Sundays because that meant having to go back to school. But then in those days, I think school was also, you know, not so nice, not so friendly. It was probably horrible, horrible teachers, horrible like stuff.
It's a sensible thing. It's a sensible thing, I think. Also, only child and all.
Yeah.
I think it'll be good for him to
have
other people around him.
Right.
And it's only Monday to Friday. It's not like a big thing.
No, it's not too bad, yeah. And is it within driving distance?
Yeah.
Okay, well then it's not so hard.
Yeah. So it's, in Santon.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's quite an adventure, and for a boy as well, it's quite an exciting thing. You know, you're going to be around your friends all week, and you're going to be doing cool things. And also, Kanejo's he's so busy. He's got so much going on. Like, he's not the kind of guy who's just going to sit around. So boarding school might be the best thing. He's going to love it.
I think he's going to love it. But he's feeling a little like anxiety.
Yeah, of course. Who wouldn't be, right?
But that's like, nah, man.
Well, when
that's the problem with.
But when you're his age, this is the biggest thing in the whole world. It is. I mean, we can say what we want as adults, but for a young man, that's like a scary time, and this is a scary thing, and that's his biggest issue in life. Like, we're all thinking about, you know, paying the bond and electricity costs and, you know, business and politics and all that stuff, but for him, that's the biggest issue on the agenda, and of course he's going to be anxious about it. I would be too. I never did go to boarding school, and a part of me is kind of...
I did too. I totally wanted to.
Anyway, we
did a... We did an exchange thing at our school with ISA, the International School of South Africa, which is out in Mafeking. Mm-hmm. Spent about a week and a half there.
Okay.
Best week ever.
Did you love it?
Wonderful. Oh, I did. I loved it. I was just like,
Do you want to do this some more? Well, I mean, that's a whole new chapter you're opening up. But talking about kids and school and Christmas and all that stuff, my brother called me yesterday afternoon and he said, "Listen, I need your help with something." So I said, "Sure, what is it?" So I need to hide one of the kids' presents in your house because otherwise they're going to go sniffing around.
Find it.
Yeah, and they'll find it before Christmas. So I've got one of their presents in my house hidden away here. So even though they come here, there's a couple of rooms they don't go into. So I've managed to put this away and they'll never find it.
Is your tree up?
No, not yet. No. When do you put yours up? You're supposed to only put it up on the 12th or something, because you're meant to have 12 days leading up to Christmas. This is like the strict rule, right? This is what I was taught when we were kids, is that you, You put it up 12 days before, and then you take it, or you take it down 12 days after Christmas. Is that right?
So kind of like, usually like that 16th is my time. But this year I might actually do it sooner, just so I can have the vibes longer.
I do like that vibe. I mean, now you've made me think maybe I should do it earlier as well. But it's such a thing, like in our family, to decorate. Hey, Lebang, how's it? There's Lebang Hosanna, everybody.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hello, Lebang.
Good, good, good.
Sorry, I'm late.
We're just talking about...
Are you late because you were tying that scarf? Is that
that? I was like... My bandana took my hair such a mess. I'm like, so nice. I can't be seen like this.
So we're good. We're just talking about like decorating your house, because I've noticed the shops are already playing Christmas music and their decorations up everywhere there. And you know, when that starts, it's downhill to the end of the year, like at a rapid rate. So I went into the shops yesterday, and they're playing all these Christmas songs. It's only a matter of time before Boney M comes on. You know that.
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's that time of year.
I still think,
and remember, for them it's money.
Oh yeah, but
they just want to make.
There's something about that Boney M music that makes us spend money. Somehow, it just activates, like, wallets out, money out, go spend. And of course, tomorrow is also.
It's like the sound of the casino.
Yeah, ting 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 ting, that stuff. Tomorrow is also Black Friday, and I said it yesterday on the show, but just stay the hell away from the shops, whatever you do.
Yeah.
Unless you have to be there.
Yeah, no. Run. Macros, all these big ones. Oof. Pick and peas.
No chance.
What? Just don't do it. Don't
wild
do it.
Horses. It's a trap. Wild horses couldn't get me to go to those shops tomorrow. Not a chance. Whatever you have to do, get it done today, and then stay away for the whole weekend. Because you know, some of them have a whole like Black Friday weekend. So, and then it becomes the whole of Black November, they say. And then Cyber Monday is Monday. And so it carries on. It's basically it's a big ploy, everybody, to get you to spend. That's all it is.
That's all. It's one big trap.
But when you came in, Lebang, we were talking about putting up our Christmas decorations at home. And I mean, you've got the kids, so you've also got pressure to do that, right? When do you do it?
Yeah, probably like 2 weeks before Christmas. So I'm kind of like very like delayed. Mm-hmm. I don't really... you know, do the whole Christmas tree way too early, because then they get too excited. So I just have to monitor that behavior. Probably like 15th, 16th of December, around there. It's get it up. Right. It's already down by like the first week of Jan. Like, I'm not playing. I just, in and out, done. Bob's your uncle. That's how I move.
Yeah, I don't mind if it gets taken down early. Like, straight after Christmas, I'm like, okay, now we're done. No point in keeping it up. You want to get back to normal as quickly as possible. Or... you know, you're in holiday. Exactly. You're in holiday mode. So you're like, come on, we can do this. So, all right, we got a few things on the agenda this morning. Talking about holidays and things, it is Thanksgiving in the U.S. this weekend. In fact, I think now, right?
Right, today.
Today, Thanksgiving. 25th. Right, so in America, they do this thing, and it comes from an old holiday where, you know, the Native Americans and the settlers got together, and they shook hands, and they shared food, and it was like the first time that there was any kind of peace on the continent. And that was the origin of it. But what it's turned into is this day where families get together and they sit around the table and they eat this traditional meal. And it's the beginning of the Christmas season for Americans. But it's also what's nice about it, if there are nice things about, you know, these holidays. And I like traditions and I like holidays like this. But they sit and they say what they're thankful for, which is actually a really cool thing, right, Pumi? I mean, do you think this will catch on here?
So I've been thinking a lot about it, because like everything else, because it's in the movies, it's in, and then kids want it, it's like Halloween, right? Suddenly, yep. Like there are people doing Halloween in the streets of Joburg. I think the Thanksgiving thing is also going to be like one of those things. But I think it's a good thing. Like, it's a good thing to be able to kind of take a moment and think about being grateful, being thankful for a thing or many things. Or sometimes it's also just being thankful that you're sitting around the table with the people that you're sitting with. I think it's a cool thing.
And that's cool. Yeah.
It is cool. Hey.
It's nice. I just don't know if like it's cool that we're sort of like taking it from America and adopting it this side.
Appropriation.
In the same way as you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's cultural appropriation, y'all. Like, the Halloween thing, I get it, because, like, sure, the kids are sort of like, it's an excuse for the kids to trick-or-treat. But yeah, something like Thanksgiving, I don't know if we should really adopt it. Maybe let's make it our own. Like, don't we have our own things going on? And shouldn't we generally just be sitting at tables being thankful and stuff? You know, like, I don't know. Well, just kind of feels...
Listen, I mean, if we're going to take Halloween, which is pretty meaningless, and it's just about the kids going around getting sweets, then let's at least appropriate a holiday where we can learn some gratitude. And because I think that is something that we miss. And even in America, it's not like they live their lives being grateful. I do this thing almost every night. I just I make a little list in my head of the things that I'm grateful for, and it might be the same thing over and over again, you know, family and friends and having a roof over my head and being able to do a job that I enjoy and all that kind of thing. And I list them so I can always be aware of how fortunate I am. And I don't take any of that stuff for granted. So I just do it automatically anyway. And I found that it didn't start automatically. I had to be consciously doing it. And I can't remember where I got the idea from, but it's not a new idea. Lots of people do this. But it does, I find it makes...
I'm sorry to tell you, Gareth, but it came from Oprah.
Well, then God bless her. I'm happy to give her credit for it.
She's the one that started the big gratitude journal movement, right?
I think it's good. I think that's a very healthy thing. Because you go to sleep, and you know, most people go to sleep worrying about what tomorrow will bring. And I even posted something on Instagram at the beginning of this week. I was like, you know what? The only thing you should be worrying about is how to make tomorrow absolutely amazing. And what's done is done. Like, you can only really worry about the present. And the past is something you can't change. And the future is sometimes beyond your control, no matter how in control you think you are. So, like, most of the time, the
future is beyond your control.
All of it. So just in the moment, to be a little bit grateful for those things that have passed. Because then you're projecting, I mean, this sounds like so woo-woo, and yesterday we were attacking motivational speakers with Sammy Lahore.
Really, guys?
Yeah, well, she was telling me about this book that she's been reading, and I know that sometimes people think I'm a hypocrite because I don't like motivational speakers, but some of them, there's some truths there, which is why people like them. So speaking of Twitter, I see someone who I like, who's a friend, has also decided to call it quits. Somizi ditches Twitter, says life is more peaceful without the app. I guess I'm either not strong or some people here are toxic as fuck, he says. This is the 24th of November, so that's yesterday. You know what? He's right. I've said this for the longest time. I don't have the app on my phone. And I know for our listeners that's boring because I talk about it so often. But I'm going to take Facebook off as well. This is going to be what I do for the holidays. You talk about gratitude lists and Thanksgiving and things. So I reckon I should get rid of all of them, Instagram as well. Even Instagram, which is fun mostly. Just for a month and see how it goes. It's not a difficult thing to do. You can give up on these things. You always reload it afterwards if you've been missing it terribly or it adds value to your life. But I'm going to see if I can get rid of it. And you know what else? This week, I've had a record low number of WhatsApps and emails to reply to. So I feel like people...
Really?
Yeah, so I feel like either people really don't like me or or they've suddenly decided, like, the end of the year is here and now we're just going to start easing off. Because work-wise, even socially, people are mostly starting to quieten down and go into their holes. And I think that could be a nice break. Just to, you're grateful about the good things, get rid of the bad things. So well done to Somizi. I don't know what you guys think of that, by the way. I mean, he's had a very tough year, obviously.
Yeah, look, Somizi, he knows that having a job like he has comes with all of that mess. People are going to have opinions. They're going to want to say something about your life because obviously you're putting your life out there to that extent.
Yeah.
But definitely, I think he should just give it a break. It wasn't working out. People were literally like crucifying him. And perhaps he just got tired. Good for him. I think it's cool.
Well, I haven't spoken to him in a while, but I did. You know who else I want to speak to is Unati, because we were talking about her the other day. She's just been canned from Kaya, and apparently she's also dropped as the host of like the GQ Awards. And I reached out to her. She hasn't replied to me, but I hope she's okay. I only did it yesterday, but I'd love to get her in and just kind of see how she is and find out how she's doing.
Yeah. Actually, that one is a tough one. Mm-hmm. It's because it's like you don't know exactly where to stand. You know, like, are the facts the facts? And also, nobody's really canceling her from like a people perspective. I'm not seeing a hashtag cancel Unati. I'm not seeing Unati must fall. People are just kind of going on with life. But it's like, what actually happened? You know, I like her so much. But like, if this did happen, then damn, I'm so sad that it happened. Like, this is a lot. I hope she's cool.
Well, I hope she's okay. I feel like, again, I'm in good company because both of these people are colleagues of mine from, you know, years of doing idols together. Anyone who seems not to care, and it's because he's not on social media, is Randall. He's like, he's just getting on with his life. He doesn't give a shit. And you know, there's a lesson in that. Like, I was the first one to find out just how these things cannot always go your way. Then it was Sumizi. Then now it's Unati. And I think that this is, it's happening everywhere. And what it's going to do is just make things a whole lot less fun. Because I know those two people. They are a lot of fun. They have enormous personalities, huge, larger-than-life personalities, right? The both of them. They are both extremely talented people. They have added such value to South Africa's culture, to South Africa's entertainment industry. I have all the time in the world. Of course, I'm biased because I worked with them for a long time and I consider them friends. But I, you know what? If we keep canceling people like them, what are we going to have left to entertain us? These boring middle of the road influencers on Instagram.
Oh God!
Can you imagine? That's what we're going to have left. And I don't want to live in that world where nothing's funny, you know, and everything's serious.
Whew. You know, I love Twitter. I have not had any like Twitter backlash, but I am very boring on Twitter. I actually have been thinking of putting my profile that says, "Do not expect me." My Twitter personality is not my real life platform personality. But I really, you know, you of course you get like some inboxes and kind of stuff like that, but you can just, I can at least just, I don't have a lot of people like that, and I love Twitter because it keeps me informed. But I am always asking myself, who are these people? Like, there was a huge thing happening on Twitter yesterday with somebody named Ino and Tebogo. And
oh my gosh.
And I'm looking at these tweets, but they're also funny as hell. Hey, South Africans know how to be funny.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, who are these people? And when you go into this and see who those people are, they have like 20,000 followers. I'm like, what the hell is going on in this? Who are these people? And who are these 20,000 people invested in like what these people are up to? And they were like talking about like silicon butts or something. I don't know what they were talking about.
I like that. By the way, it feels like I had an arm implant. I went for my second vaccine this week. And this shoulder.
An arm implant.
Congratulations.
It feels sore, man. Well, I promised I would keep people updated, you know, on this show. When was it? Sort of late. No, it wasn't even late last year. It was probably in June, July this year. And I said, I'm not in a hurry to get this vaccine. So everyone obviously who doesn't like me jumps on like, oh, he's an anti-vaxxer, right? So then I go for the vaccine in September because I want to be able to travel. I don't care. It's not political to me. I'm not hugely pro or anti. I don't care. Like, I'm really not. I'm in the middle of the road on this thing. But I thought I'm going to go and do it so that I can travel once travel opens up. That's the only reason. It's not a health concern. I don't care about coronavirus. You know how I've been pretty consistent about this, right, Pums? Or am I wrong?
Absolutely.
So then I go in for the first shot. And I found out the other day that some person who I've got like a tangential work relationship with doesn't want anything to do with me anymore because she thinks I'm an anti-vaxxer. So I can't tell you who it is because I don't actually have beef with this person, but I didn't know they had beef with me just because I said I'm not in a hurry to get this thing in June, but she hasn't updated her app. So she doesn't know that I had the vaccination in September, and now I've gone for my second. I'm fully vaccinated now. So how can you call me an anti? How do you go around saying that about someone when you're not even interested enough to know that they've gone ahead and done exactly the opposite of what you thought they were doing. So I was just annoyed.
She sounds like a Karen.
She sounds like a real Karen. Well, she is.
Proper.
So anyway, yeah. I mean, it is amazing. Like there are people who will just, they will take a stand. Like now, of course, I'm going to have the opposite. I'm going to have all the people who hate the vaccine mailing me, going, oh, you've sold out. You're such a, what is wrong with you? So that's going to happen. But, oh, you know, what have we been doing here on this show for 7.5 years? We've been telling our stories and coming up and talking to each other. And I'm not going to hide stuff from anybody. If you don't like the vaccination and you think that I've sold out, too bad. It's not your body, it's mine.
I keep asking myself why this vaccination has become so political.
How? Yeah. Was this because of Trump and Biden? Was this because of the American election? Because that seems to me the most logical explanation for it.
It's become so political. I'm just like, you know what? Get it, don't get it. Like, do what you need to do.
How is it anyone else's business? Frankly, do you go around disclosing your HIV status to people? Do you go around telling people whether you're pregnant or not if you don't know them? Do you go around telling people that you that you're sick or that you're healthy unless it's any of their business? I don't think it is. I think that this stuff really should be personal. But, you know, for some people, it's all hugely important because it tells them something about your politics. And they think
also available. So this is let's take a moment for an ad break. The vaccine, if you're interested, is now also available for under 17s.
Okay, who ironically of all the age groups need them the least?
Yeah,
because there've been like 10 kids in the whole world who've died from COVID. You know,
but the kids are still getting it. Like my son's school last week, I got an email that one of the grade threes tested positive. This week, I got another email that a grade five tested positive. So it's a real thing. It's actually really still happening right underneath our noses.
Yeah, but kids,
so sure, they may not be dying, but they're still getting it.
Yeah, and kids.
And they bring it home to the parents.
To granny and grandpa and mommy and daddy. Mm-hmm.
But remember, they didn't tell us. And I see the what do they call them? The FDA? No, not the Food and Drug Administration. The CDC. The
Center for Disease Control.
They've just updated and said now, there are these things that can happen with the vaccine. If you there are these side effects that we've discovered, like myocarditis, especially in young men, which is a thing. But they've been very open about the fact that this thing doesn't prevent you from catching the virus. All it does is gives you a much better chance of not dying from it or being hospitalized from it. So again, for kids, you know, what's the worry? So anyway, Pihleng wants to know here, Pums, before we move on to headlines.
I want to desperately.
Pihleng says, are you going to go to the Dubai Expo? You spoke a lot about it last year. I've been seeing a million ads about it lately. How long is it still on for, Pumi?
It's until March.
Okay.
So it is on for like 6 months. And it's until March. Plans are afoot. I am so desperate to go to that Dubai festival. I've been having a chat with a friend of mine who works for South African Tourism, because obviously every country has got either a pavilion or a stall or whatever at the festival. And so I'm kind of going, because Dubai is also an extremely expensive holiday destination.
Huge.
So you know, people like me who are not slay queens, who don't get like girlfriend allowances. Like, I'm not getting 450,000 rand girlfriend allowance. And I have to feed a growing boy, which will also take out your budget completely. So I'm kind of trying to see if I can get somebody who let me stay with them when they're working at the Dubai Festival. Mm-hmm. But yeah. No. Totally. And I have seen such cool. So I follow it on Instagram and Twitter, and I've seen such cool installations, such cool spaces and the various things. So like the Dubai, that 2020, Dubai 2020is like the Rand show of the world.
I don't know if the Rand show is such an inviting comparison. Yeah, I don't think anyone.
No, and totally is. Like, do you remember when you were little going to the Rancho? There's like all sorts of things. Like all, like you can go and see installations about, well, I don't know, astronauts. You can go talk to an astronaut. You can go and see like the Israel Pavilion with all their technology and all the stuff that they're doing. That you can go eat food from anywhere. Yeah, in the
can
world.
We,
come on,
can
guys.
We just point out how much progress that is, that there's an Israel Pavilion in Dubai at the UAE, you know, in that expo. That's a very positive thing. Like that shows you that the Middle East may just be starting to grow up.
Well, dude. Last week we spoke about the Abraham Accords.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia signed the Abraham Accords.
Yep.
So, like, you know, so. Yeah.
So there is.
The world is healing itself, apparently. Slowly. Like, that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's still going to be assholes. And we'll talk about some of them in the Burning Platform, no doubt, later on.
Jesus, there are many of them.
But you speak about this expo. So we've got a great new series on cliffcentral.com in its many forms, from the largest servers to the tiniest wearables. The computer has become an indispensable part of our lives, but it had to fight to earn its place. Since the birth of the concept in the late 19th century, that's how long we've been thinking about computers, the computer hasn't always been appreciated as the modern marvel we see it as today. Now, I think you probably might have listened to the first episode about the phone and how that's revolutionized the world. But Opposed to Innovation, the Stories of Technologies That Changed the World, is hosted by Francisco Nwamba, and it's brought to you by BMW, which shares the tales of technologies that were shunned and ridiculed, but went on to revolutionize the world. Episode 2 is now available on cliffcentral.com, the Cliff Central app, Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And I would suggest that, especially because you might have a little more time on your hands at this time of year, you listen to the whole series. We're releasing it one episode at a time, but it's really cool. It gives you such perspective on, in these two episodes, phones and computers, things that we just take for granted now, and how they had to fight for their place. You know, nobody just went, oh, the computer, obviously that's a great idea. Only a few people really believed in it, and now the rest of us think, oh, well, obviously computers. But if you were in the 1900s, early 1900s, and someone talked to you about this, you'd say, oh, please, newfangled nonsense, who needs it? Don't think you'd be on the bandwagon, because you might not. And there's some other podcasts I'll tell you about a little later on. We're going to be joined shortly. We're going to do five things you need to know, but we'll be joined shortly to talk about security hygiene. Now, you know, cybercrime at this time of year, how much have we spoken about that in the last few weeks? And you getting emails from Nigerian princes like I am?
Yeah.
Dude, the thing that fascinates me the most is, like, you'll send an innocuous email about whatever. That's how you know they've got the spyware. Then you get an email back saying, hey, you actually, and the title of the email will be like, Minister of Finance, from the desk of the Minister of Finance. And you've just like sent an email out saying, oh, we're looking for rah, 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 and finance.
Huh.
Then you get, yes, from the Minister of Finance. I got one yesterday from FIFA.
Oh, nice.
From
well, that, you know, that,
okay.
But Pumi, that could be, that FIFA could be legit, because FIFA would send people money and then they'll take it back from you later on. So be careful.
FIFA wants to send me money.
Go get your money, girl. Go get your money.
Also, there's that UN, like, people who don't want to get vaccinated, there's a UN, like, COVID fund that people should be benefiting from. Y'all should be benefiting from the UN COVID
Well,
fund.
I'll tell you what. I keep getting ads whenever I do, whenever I'm watching a video on YouTube or on Facebook. Not on YouTube, because I've got that YouTube premium, so I don't have to see ads. But Facebook, sometimes when you're watching a video in the feed, and then it's interrupted by a United Nations ad about some poor lady in Somalia who's trying to feed 8 kids or whatever. And it doesn't let you skip the ad, so you have to watch this goddamn thing for 40-odd seconds. And I'm sorry, I like the UN has got to do better than this. They've got to do better. For an organization of that size, it costs that much money to keep going. They've got to do better. And they're actually asking for money. And I'm like, what, are you kidding? You get money from our governments where we're already paying them taxes. You're not having more of our money, UN. When else did they do anything for you or for me? Anyway, so we'll talk about cyber hygiene and cyber crime, and we'll do that with Performanta in just a couple of minutes' time. We'll be talking to them about exactly how it works. A guy called Gerard Swart, who will be joining us. But here are a couple of headlines just to remind you of all the craziness on planet Earth. First of all, you know these municipal elections, it's not over yet, right? But there was suspense and tight security as the Etekwini Council met again to elect a new mayor. Apparently, there was very tight security around the Durban ICC on Wednesday. What is going on there, Pums? You know, you go to KZN more than Lebang and I. What do you know about what's going on? Because the ANC is in such trouble. Nobody wants to be their friends at the moment. They've been completely banished.
You remember we had some weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago now, Sipho Shezi on the show.
Absolutely.
And every time I read headlines about what's happening in KZN, or hear what's happening and don't see the headlines, I always think about what he was telling us. KZN is in deep, deep trouble. You know, there's so much chaos on the ground. There's no leadership.
Yeah.
There are what we've always looked at as pillars of society, you know, the structural pillars of society, have all but collapsed in KZN. Have all but collapsed. There's no political leadership. There's no civil leadership. All of it is, and it's mayhem out there.
Well, it is mayhem. Apparently.
It really is. When
apparently the ANC stormed the meeting, disrupted it. There was suspense and frantic...
On Monday.
Yeah, this is Monday. Frantic efforts to ensure all opposition parties voted as a bloc to oust the ANC. But the ANC then said that they had been able to strike deals with independent councillors and other minority parties in order to thwart attempts by the IFP, EFF and DA to vote for the DA's Nicole Graham to take the vote. So it's getting very intense. And of course, the ANC have already lost all of Gauteng, right? They've lost Ekurhuleni, they've lost Johannesburg, they've lost
the metro.
Yeah.
They've lost.
Yeah. That's over for the ANC.
Mogale City.
Yes.
Also, the way that they entered, I don't know if you guys saw how like they bombarded it. They came in like singing and chanting like a group of I don't know what. But it was quite chaotic. It was almost like invasive. Like everybody was there, like, oh, what's going on? The ANC has arrived.
Yep. And understand that those people are not councillors. So the people that you saw on that video kind of chanting and throwing tables over, they're not councillors. So those are just like thugs off the street.
Rent a crowd.
And
speaking of like pillars that have collapsed, that is where you would expect that law enforcement would step in.
Yep. And,
right? Because that's just pure vandalism and criminality. Mm.
But aren't these the same people who caused the riots and the looting back in June, July? They must be.
Oh, but
it's probably the same people, right?
Oh, but here we are in November, and we, you know, what has happened with all of that?
Only a few arrests, and it was like a token arrest thing because the ANC itself is responsible for these things. So why should they arrest their own comrades? Anyway, there are other stories in the news. Divert your attention quickly to one or two of those because we need to know what's going on. So Biden has dived into the U.S. oil reserves to reassure Americans on inflation. Those are the oil reserves that, thank God, Trump filled up. But now Biden's emptying them out because, you know, people are really pissed off at the moment. They're paying a huge amount for petrol and for diesel. Americans are used to having low prices for those things. And Biden has gone and tapped into what they call the U.S. Strategic Oil Reserve. That's basically it's a stockade of or a storage of huge amounts of petroleum, which they keep in part, you know, all over the country in distributed places. But it's always under lock and key, and it's very carefully maintained, and they try to keep the levels up. It's in case there's a war or something. But he's decided, no. Let's put some of this into the market because consumers are complaining and his approval ratings are at the lowest level ever. In fact, they're lower than even Trump's were at their lowest. That'll tell you something. And then, if you care about this, Prince William and Kate Middleton, Princess Kate, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, they believe to have offered their Christmas concert to ITV instead of the BBC. So that's very controversial. Why? Because the BBC is the state broadcaster, and they usually have a pretty good relationship with the royal family. But the couples are said to be unhappy with the new BBC documentary about the royal family's relationship with the media. So they decided they'll sell their Christmas Carol concert to ITV. How's that?
You said Prince William, I thought you were going to talk about his blaming Africa's population explosion.
Is that what he did?
the overpopulation in Africa is... You know, all the greenhouse gases.
Hey,
and
you know these people who go on about overpopulation. Let me tell you something. In most countries in the world, including China, because they had a one-child policy for so long, we don't even have replacement numbers. So you better be grateful that Africa is at least making more people. Because who's going to do all the work one day when you're all old? Right? Who's going to be making the businesses tick? What, do you think it's going to be 70 and 80-year-old old people when we're at that age? It's not.
But also just talking sideways out his mouth, like there is, you know?
Anyway, look.
Baseless.
Yeah.
Like the average carbon footprint of Africa versus the average carbon footprint of, say, Londoner.
Cannot compare them. And then just finally, Batabile Dlamini's lawyers have accused the state of being disingenuous in a perjury case. The lawyer representing her has accused the state. Remember Batabile Dlamini? They've accused the state of being disingenuous by withholding details of her trial, including the number of witnesses scheduled. So Batabile's, she was the social development minister when problems arose with the distribution of social grants back in 2017. So she's going, you know, the wheels of justice, they may turn, but they turn very slowly. This happened all the way back in 2017. She's going to appear in the Joburg Magistrates Court, and the first witness is expected to take the stand today. Testimony has not been heard because the state has not consulted its witnesses. So we'll have to watch that one and see what happens. Pums, that sounds like the kind of thing you might give a passing glance to. Yes? No? Yeah. Let's see what she's up to, that Batabile Dlamini.
Somebody's got to watch these people carefully. But it's also not just Batabile. It's not just Batabile that I'm watching when I watch those kinds of things. I actually am very interested to see kind of the follow-through. The follow-through in prosecutions.
Well, let's see if it actually happens. Absolutely. Because we've still got this, what's her name? Shamila Batoy, who's, I don't know what she's doing. What's she doing? Sitting on her hands, going to meetings. Certainly not prosecuting people. Seems like you can get away with anything at the moment. The prosecution authority's just doing nothing. Okay, let's get our attention to something that really is important and that we need to be paying attention to, especially as we go into the holidays. We were joking about it just now, but it's actually a very serious matter. Cybercrime, which we talk about on the show often, cybercrime has evolved to become an even greater threat than it's ever been. It's not hard to steal someone's login details, as you know, to break into their bank accounts, to hijack their identity. This was not the case 10 to 15 years ago. It didn't happen as much. And if it did, it was a rare thing. And cybercrime was not as lucrative back then either. But today, it is a much more dangerous situation. I was actually talking to my private banker. I hardly ever speak to him, but I spoke to him like, 3-4 weeks ago? And he was telling me this is number one concern for them. And really, in order to make sure that you are safe, or at least that you protect yourself and you're aware of what's going on, you can thank Gerard Swart, who's going to be joining us this morning. He's the head of sales engineering at Performanta. That's the company. He has over 22 years of IT technical experience in a diverse range of fields. That includes networking, server and desktop support, security infrastructure, and he's been in various industries ranging from healthcare to retail, financial, government, even telecommunications. And over the last 7 years, he's developed his expertise to expand across the full cyber security landscape. And he joins us today to talk about the potential impact of cybersecurity breaches here in South Africa. If you've already had your information stolen, or it's on some database that you didn't give permission for, seems that Poppy Act is all just a figment of our imaginations, right? Doesn't seem to protect any of us.
Yeah, it was just an excuse. It was just an excuse to spam our inboxes with emails from every company that you work with.
Exactly.
Look and at us. We pretend to be busy.
Yeah. But here's Gerard. Hey, Gerard, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Good and you.
Good. Nice to see you, man. So, Gerard, I mean, we just touched on like some of the things that are going on in our lives and how we get these spam emails the whole time. And I think that's not unusual for anybody. But how serious is this problem at the moment? I mean, cyber criminals are going to enormous lengths to fool their targets, right? They even phone people to make things seem official. My business partner made a payment. And then within a couple of minutes, she got a call from someone who was pretending to be from the bank. And it sounded totally legit. And if she didn't know that this person was, you know, because the bank doesn't do that. They always tell you they won't do that. Some alarm bell went off. But, I mean, she could have had a couple of thousand, tens of thousands of rand stolen from her. And this happens to a lot of people. Can we trust anybody? Mm-hmm. What's going on?
No, we can't. We can't. And it's actually simple, Gareth. And I want to translate it into a monetary value. I think then we all get the picture of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So Interpol's the Africa Cyber Crimes Division recently released a report, and South Africa is currently the third highest cyber crime victims worldwide.
Oh my God.
Third highest.
Sure.
Yeah. It's our economy is suffering 2.2 billion rand a year.
Oh my
God. That's just on last year. And you've obviously seen in the news all the big breaches this year. Mm. It's really scary out there. It's bad. On average, a data breach costs a South African organization anywhere between 46 and 52 million rand. And that excludes the reputational damage. It's bad.
That's really terrible. So tell us about like where most of this is happening, because we mentioned email, but phone apps are also not as safe as they appear. And, you know, we carry these things with us. We put all of our information on there. You don't need the actual device to be stolen to have people hack in and get everything out of your phone anyway, right?
Correct. But look, most of the problems is people not being vigilant. That's the biggest problem.
Okay.
And you've touched on the banking. You guys have touched on the Poppy Act, etc. But the most critical aspect that we can have is any user on my phone, on my laptop, anywhere I am, is what we call multi-factor authentication.
Yeah.
A good example of this is when you set up a new payment with your bank, obviously you get a PIN, you enter that PIN, only then does it get authorized.
Right.
That is the most critical aspect that we can all do. There's no silver bullet in cybersecurity, but that's about the closest we can get to protecting a user.
Okay.
And then there's, phishing is on the up as well, and especially since the pandemic started. And if we actually look how the criminals are doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, LinkedIn and Facebook were breached again the other day, a couple of months ago. And what these guys are doing is they're getting so specific that they would, for example, they say, Gareth, on record we have, this is your username, this is your password, this is where you live, mm-hmm. this is your email address, et cetera, et cetera. And then they will say, please click on this link, because we've been breached, please click on this link so that you can reset your password. Looks legit, right?
Yeah.
Looks
sounds, legit. Sounds totally legit.
It's not. Yeah. In the background, they will download ransomware. I mean, ransomware is on the up tremendously. And so, we were hoping with a... Yeah, sorry.
No, just tell us what ransomware is, because many of us don't know these definitions, you know? It's not obvious.
Right, no problem. Yeah, so ransomware is a typical application that will download in the background onto your... I don't know, it could even be a phone nowadays. And essentially what this does is it encrypts your data. What encryption is, it basically scrambles your data.
Yeah.
And you cannot access that data without paying these criminals. And it's usually in the form of Bitcoin or something like that.
Okay.
Usually.
Yeah.
You've obviously seen with a whole bunch of breaches this year where in South Africa, where people have had to pay to get the data back because it, Transnet is a great example. Look how much damage that has done to the country, not just from a GDP point of view.
Right.
But also reputation point of view. I mean, that's one of the busiest ports in the Durban ports, one of the busiest ports in Africa.
Yeah, I remember we was shut down for like a week and a half.
Yeah. And the Department of Justice, another
problem. Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So what has been happening is in the Eastern Bloc, they've been setting up companies over the years in the Europe Eastern Bloc, legit companies. And people literally pay these guys to get data, cause damage, et cetera, et cetera. It happens every day. I mean, right now in South Africa, this last year, we had 230 million. 230 million attacks into South Africa.
Good Lord, that's insane. Yeah. And most of us think it'll never happen to us, right? Most people are like, oh, well, that's something that happens to big government departments or, you know, big
I'm even involved in a welfare organization, very small, but the amount of data we keep there, it's so critical. If that leaks out, it can do so much damage. So, I mean, you mentioning governments, you mentioning big financial. I mean, we've seen banks over the years, Standard Bank many years ago with a breach through an ATM in Japan. Never thought that would happen, but and it keeps evolving. And as we catch up to the criminals, they develop more and more and more. So we're always that one step behind. It's sad.
So Gerard, tell me about the danger of public Wi-Fi. Because we often, you know, you'll be walking through a mall, for example, or you'll go to a place where you need to buy or sell something, or you need to fill in a document or something, and they offer you this, you know, it pops up on your phone, there's free public Wi-Fi. And most people go, oh, thank goodness, I don't want to spend on data. And you log on to these things. If you do your internet banking on a public Wi-Fi, that's not a good idea.
No, it's not.
And that's just one of the things you shouldn't do.
Yeah, no, never, never, never. And you know what, with us going into the silly season now, et cetera, I mean, it's one of the key things that we do is we just connect. We're in a shopping center, as you say.
Yeah.
The threat of a public Wi-Fi and them stealing your credentials, et cetera, is real. I mean, they call it a man-in-the-middle attack where they can just, what we call a sniff. So they're listening in on the Wi-Fi. The criminal can make you connect to his laptop and not a Wi-Fi AP as such, etc. Sure. No, it's real. Stay off public Wi-Fi. It is the worst thing in the world. And unfortunately, we all do it, right?
Yeah. Would you suggest people should use VPNs as well, virtual private networks?
Absolutely.
You think that's important?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it lets us stream better movies, I guess.
So I just want to go to some of the comments here, because Simon says, my company files got hit with ransomware. I was about to transfer for some Bitcoin, and they want to double. I told them to fuck off. Don't pay ransoms. What do you think of that?
Yeah, so what happens a lot of time is when you pay a ransomware once, they will target you again. Not immediately, but in a couple of months later, or a year later, or 2 years later, they will. The best is most of the organizations nowadays in South Africa have cyber insurance. My advice is always speak to your cyber insurance first. Yeah, absolutely. It's so critical because they will bring in a forensics team. They could bring in an organization like us, etc. When you are breached, the first thing that we try and do is try and contain the problem. The first challenge is these attackers have probably been in your environment for 3 to 6 months, just listening, gathering data, information.
Wow.
So detection is the most important aspect.
So when you get an email that says, I've been watching you and your browser, and I know what you've been watching and all the sites you go to. I know the first time I got that email, I was just like, listen, dude. Nothing that exciting happens in my life. Nothing that exciting happens in my life.
So Pumi, yes and no. Mostly no. Just delete those emails, block the user. Also report the user. So if they're using Gmail, for example, report the user. You can report the user back to them, etc. But most of the time, no, it's not unless you are permanently on Pornhub or sites like that, Pumi, which I'm sure you are, but that's a different story.
Nothing exciting happens on my computer.
Gerard, there's some other people's questions here. Jean says, Gerard, how safe is a VPN?
No, it's pretty safe. And I'm going to try not to go too technical, but essentially what happens is you initiate authentication on your side, which the other side then responds to. And that whole method is then encrypted. Remember I spoke about encryption earlier. It's basically scrambling the data. So a man in the middle attack, it's very unlikely, I'm not saying it can't happen, but it's very unlikely that you can be breached through a VPN. And we use VPN for work, all of us. We use VPN for work, etc. So it is pretty safe, but nothing is 100% safe. Like I said, no silver bullet, unfortunately.
I mean, again, we seem to be dealing with money, but there are other kinds of cyber attacks too. And we'll talk about identity if we have the time. I see we're pretty much running out of time here. But Tracy says tap and go is another thing, because now these credit cards, you don't need to put in a PIN for any amount under $4.99, for example. And then, you know, someone could do that 20 times. That's a lot of money.
What the banks have introduced is... And let's use an example here. Let's say if you tap 20 times, it'll literally stop after 5-6 times and the bank will literally phone you. I've experienced this as well.
I think what Tracy is saying is that if your tap and go has that 500 Rand limit and they hit 20 different people, because they're not going to hit the same person.
Yeah, 20 different
people, that is a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
But listen, y'all, what did you say? Two-step authentication.
Multi-factor authentication, two-factor authentication. It's the same thing, yes.
That shit will save your money. It will save your money.
Absolutely.
My tap and go, if you want to tap 20 rand, user PIN requested,
so, Gerard, 20 rand. I mean, for companies, you talk about things like cyber insurance, but for many of us, we don't even know where to start. I assume that is what your business Performanta do. So tell us a little bit about that before we have to wrap this up. I want to know what your business is and how you can help us.
Okay. All right. So we've been in the industry about 12 years now. And essentially what we do is we provide cybersecurity services across the full entire landscape. This would include network security, endpoint security, identity and access management, data security. So we're talking about Poppy, a lot of work around Poppy. We obviously do from a consulting point of view as well, et cetera, et cetera. Where we do specialize is our detection capability. So, and you can look at any organization out there to employ people to actually look at what's happening in my environment. 24/7 costs a lot of money. So we obviously do that for customers, detect those, if I can call them, bastards before they actually do any harm.
Yes, no, you should. That's what you got to call them. All right. So what's the best way to find you guys, and how can we rope you in to help us take care of our own cybersecurity? It's so important. I mean, there's no amount of time and money that you spend on this that isn't worth it.
No. And it's tricky to spend it on the right thing. So just quickly is that we won't just sell you a product or technology. It's really about that consultative engagement is look at what does Gareth have and how can we use that first before we start expanding. And you can get in contact with us on obviously all the social media platforms, but our website is www.performanta.com.
That is perform and then M-A-N-T-A. All one word.
Yeah, perform A-N-T-A. Yeah.
There we go. Perform A-N-T-A. Make sure that you get on there and go and check them out. And thank you so much for being on the show this morning. This is something we've got to think about. People are spending money over Christmas and the holidays, but some of it isn't even them. It's the criminals. Let's make sure that we don't lose our money and lose our identity and lose all that stuff online, because there are lots of really dodgy people. Every time you hook up with the internet, there's something crazy going on in the background that you might not even be aware of. So thanks. Good to see you.
Can I say one more thing, guys?
Sure.
It's the season for phishing.
Be very careful of that stuff. All right. Thanks so much. Gerard, good to see you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day. Man.
Thank you. There's Gerard Swart from Performanta, and you can find them at on Perform A-N-T-A, one word, Perform A-N-T-A. Just look them up, and you'll be able to discover all the things that you need to be paying attention to. And if you haven't, if you've got your own business or you work for a business in, you know, the IT division, you need to know this stuff. All right, coming up, we've got the Burning Platform. I've got a great book by this terrific man, Bonang Mohale, who we're going to be speaking to just now. There, Pumi's got it too. Pumi's even made notes. She's got post-its in the book. She's made notes for
damn straight, yo. Right. Damn straight.
We'll also be joined. So the great Bonang Mohale will be joining us, and we'll also be joined by Pumlani Majozi, who's been absent from the show a while, and he's a good friend of the show and someone who's always got interesting insights. And both of these gentlemen will be joining us for the Burning Platform next. Lebang, we will see you probably tomorrow. Good stuff.
Yeah, but 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. Live with Lebang this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Essential.
Today.
Essential. Don't miss it. All right. We'll be back in a moment or two with the Burning Platform, cliffcentral.com. Good morning.
Cliffcentral.com.